It says 100 days is what we always focus on. It seems like there's like been 100 days. David Arredondo joins us this morning.
Hey, good morning, Bruce. Good morning, Craig. Good to be here with
you. It almost seems that there's enough things happening that the last thing that they were discussing has already been pushed to the back because there's something new that Donald Trump is doing each week. Does it seem like that, or is it really that way?
It is that way because if you've noticed, even from Inauguration Day to the present, there's some new announcement of an executive order or cabinet appointee or a new policy that is being proposed legislation. It is just nonstop right now.
And is that a good thing, or where does that relate to, you know, knowing how presidential's time go? Is there going to be a lot of things like pots on a stove, or are we going to get a meal sometime?
What I've said all along about Trump from the beginning, and that is, watch what he does, not what he says. A lot of people have gotten exercised and, have gone out on tangents because of things that he has said. And yet, up until January the 20th, he really couldn't do much of anything until then. So now is the time to see if, in fact, some of the rhetoric goes into action or whether or not it is just rhetoric. I think when you see such things as committing to building a wall, which he signed that order yesterday, and, also to allow for the XL pipeline to go forward, these are things that he might have talked about, but now they are going to happen.
You know, David, he's taking a lot of heat from critics, like most presidents do, from the opposing party. I wonder if some of it goes back to him, because he's so active on social media, and he's putting things out there. This week alone, again, he's talking about the election returns and the number of votes and supposed voter fraud. Does that take away from what he's doing?
It doesn't, insofar as it's a 24-hour news cycle, and within the next 24 hours there's something else that's going on. So what we have forgotten about whatever happened the last 24 or 48 hours that you might have mentioned, we're now into something new. And I think every day you're going to see a barometer of what some of these statements might be all about, and that is when you look at where the stock market is going. I mean, we saw that within 24 hours of the election. We've seen it during the transition period. Monday was the first day of the stock market in the new Trump administration. We saw it, I believe, go down a few points. Yesterday it rebounded 112 points or so. So I think there are ways to find out whether, in fact, these issues or these statements have any lasting effect or not.
We're talking this morning with David Arredondo, our conservative political consultant here, looking at things for the inauguration, just sort of seeing that event yourself. And how did you see that came out to the way it looked compared to previous ones that you've seen, or how the pomp and circumstance behind all of that?
Yeah, the only inauguration that I've been able to attend live in my lifetime was probably one that will never be matched, and that is the 1981 inauguration of Ronald Reagan, in which he defied tradition. Talk about somebody who breaks the mold. Reagan did a lot of that. Instead of having the inauguration on the east side of the Capitol, where it was always held and where it was held Friday, he decided to hold it on the west side. So we were very fortunate to get VIP passes to be on the lawn of the Capitol, probably within 50 yards of the podium, and still have some pictures of him taking the oath of office in a distance there. But that was you know, most memorable for me. I didn't see anything out of the ordinary here. He took the oath. He probably what was unusual was the shortness of his speech, 20 minutes.
I've got to go back to Ronald Reagan. Do you know why he decided to have it on the other side of the Capitol?
I believe he believed that he was from California, and I believe that he felt that this was, you know, the, you know, looking out on the ocean or something to you know, figuratively from where he would have been. So what he wanted to do was to, I guess, look west from the Capitol across the United States and say, this is what I am leading everybody to the west of here.
Have any other presidents done that since?
No.
He's the only one.
Yeah.
Okay. Today, President Trump tweeted out he is going to make a nomination to the Supreme Court. And I believe he said a week from tomorrow.
Next Thursday.
Yeah.
A week from tomorrow. Any thoughts on who that might be? I know early on in the campaign he mentioned some people.
Yeah. This was to his credit. Candidate Trump and now President Trump did some things that other candidates didn't have the courage to do, and that was one of them. He named about 21 conservative jurists who he had his staff at and determined that they would be in the mold of Antonin Scalia. From what I have seen, there are three possible nominees. One who is a front runner is from Colorado, and right now it appears that he's 49 years old. Right now the name escapes me, but you'll be hearing a lot of him if, in fact, he is the nominee.
Can Democrats slow down that process? Can they obstruct that process as Republicans refuse to take up President Obama's nominee?
Well, that's a good point. And my understanding is for the confirmation of a Supreme Court justice, they need to have at least 61 votes, if I'm not mistaken. I know Harry Reid changed the filibuster rule to 51, which essentially, you know, that applies to cabinet positions, but I think it didn't apply to a Supreme Court nominee. So right now there are 54 Republican senators. They would need at least seven more in order to confirm. Assuming this is not a polarizing candidate, I believe that he will be confirmed. Something to keep in mind over the next 2 years in the legislation is there are 25 Democratic senators, including Sherrod Brown, from states that are red states, states that went for Donald Trump. These senators are going to have to be mindful of that electorate in those states if they want to get reelected in 2 years. And so I believe senators like Joe Manchin of West Virginia are going to be as reasonable and cooperative. We've already seen Manchin show some outreach to the administration. So I believe that unless this is a very right-wing ideological nominee, and I don't believe those three that have been mentioned as the top three, I don't believe there will be any difficulty in getting him confirmed.
I'm going to play a little bit about, we have a feature called Focus on, it used to be Road to the White House, as it was for, because now that we have the president in place, it's a basic a daily detail of what went on or what's going on.
Focus on the White House. President Trump is about to take executive action on immigration.
President Trump promised he would use extreme vetting, once even proposing a Muslim immigration ban. Now sources tell ABC News the president is likely to suspend immigration from countries known for terrorists, including Iran, Libya, Somalia, Sudan, Syria, and Yemen. Part of that announcement may come as he visits the Department of Homeland Security. Andy Field, ABC News, Washington.
The president lost the popular vote. He maintains it's because millions of people voted illegally. Elections officials have said there's no evidence of widespread vote fraud. But White House spokesman Sean Spicer says the president's belief is on unreleased studies and information.
It's a belief he maintains.
New York Democratic Senator Charles Schumer says it's time for the president to start acting like one.
You cannot run a government. You cannot help people.
You cannot keep America safe if you don't actually admit to the facts.
Richard Cantu, ABC News.
So there's a lot going on there. There's also the gag order with the EPA or whatever like that. So it seems to be many different things happening.
Well, let me make a comment about his accusation that millions voted illegally. If you remember when you and I registered to vote back in the day, we went to the Board of Elections. That was the only place you could do it. We had to take our birth certificate to show that we were born Americans or naturalization papers. Today, all you have to do is sign a statement that says, I affirm that all of these facts are true. Is it entirely possible that somebody could lie about affirming that they were born or naturalized citizens? So in other words, we don't have a check against that. Is it possible that some people have done that? Yes, I think it's entirely possible. Unless we catch them, we don't know. And even when we do catch people who have voted illegally, there's very little that is done about it. We had a case here in Lorain County in which Councilman Dennis Flores made that charge and found that 7 or 8 votes were cast illegally. They changed the election, and he retained his seat. So voter fraud does occur, whether it's in the millions. We don't know, because we don't know who has lied to gain that registration to vote.
How should people be registered then? What do you think is the best way to do it?
I believe that most sensible countries do it in the way that we used to do it, that you do have a document that shows that you're a naturalized citizen or you are American born. You take it to the Board of Elections, and that's where you do your registration. And if you do it in that fashion, I don't think there's any problem in doubting whether, in fact, people who are registered to vote are actually, legally, allowed to do so.
Opponents, though, might say, well, they've got to get to the Board of Elections. Some people don't have transportation. Some people don't have these documents. They can't afford to get these documents.
Well, I don't know what the cost is to get a copy of your birth certificate, but I can't believe that it is so onerous that it can't be done. And that is largely the argument that was made to do the motor voter law. And we find that in most cases, those folks who we bent over backwards to, make exceptions for because they can't afford it or they can't get there or whatever the case is, rarely show up to vote after the presidential election. So I am still, I wish that we could go back to what we had, and that is to be able to remove any doubt that a person who's registered to vote is, in fact, registered to vote.
Well, before we let you go, I want to switch topics just briefly. I see in the paper there's a thing about first Cuban imports arrive. Charcoal breaks 50-year trade embargo. Who knew that would be the first thing that would arrive in the United States, apparently for pizza and bread ovens.
I'm sure. I wouldn't be a bit surprised that some of those executive orders that Barack Obama signed regarding Cuba will be reversed by the Trump administration.
Is that typical, or does that happen a lot when you change parties? There's like this all undoing of things that were done by the previous administration, or is this a disparate case of this between two different viewpoints?
I think that yes and no, that yes, there are always things that are changed by executive order with a change of administration. To the extent that they are as publicized and perhaps as controversial as they are, for example, the XL pipeline, there was a lot of pros and cons on the XL pipeline, and Obama said, we're not going to do it. And now it looks like it's going to go through, and it's going to hopefully generate in thousands and thousands of jobs, hopefully some lower petroleum prices for us. So we'll see what good comes of that.
All right. Well, we appreciate you coming in this morning. look at the pocket square that David has there as well.
I always have a pocket square.
That's really cool.
Pocket square.
Thank you.
Appreciate you coming in, David.